I told the 10:30 service that even though there are fewer people here, that y'all want to spend even more time greeting each other. So I think that's a good thing, though, that you like each other. So we are still in our series, Finding Our Love Languages in Life and in Worship. Last week, we looked at quality time, and we asked how we can give the people in our lives and give God our undivided attention. This week, we are looking at acts of service. We're looking at a text from John chapter 15. In the Gospel of John, Jesus gives a long talk to his disciples while they are in the upper room the night that Jesus is going to be betrayed. He starts off by washing their feet, which is a shocking act of service. And then he tells them several chapters worth of final teachings. The theme of serving others comes up quite a few times. We'll see. Anyone here seen TLDR on the internet? TLDR, yeah, there's an age bias on who's heard of that. So that means too long, didn't read. If you don't want to read all of Jesus' final teachings, this is the TLDR summary for you. If you are able, please stand for the reading from the Gospel from John chapter 15. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. And you are my friends if you do what I have commanded you. This is the word of the Lord, so thanks be to God. You may be seated. I want to give a scenario to you, and I want you to score me. This is Olympic-style scoring. If this is how good of a job I am doing on this hypothetical act of service. This isn't golf scoring. 10 is the highest. 1 is the lowest. Imagine that I want to serve my wife, and I'm going to serve her just in a small way by doing the dishes without her telling me to do that while she's away. But I kind of forget and wait till like 5 minutes before she gets home, so I'm still doing them when she gets home. And when she walks in, she wants to tell me about her day, and I say, I can't talk. I'm serving you by doing all these dishes, and tomorrow let's eat out so there aren't any more dishes. What do you think? Give me the call out the score. What do you got? We got a 5. We got 4, 5. It's kind of that middle. We got some 3. We got a 1. Okay. But the dishes are done. I mean, come on. Isn't that worth at least a 2? In other words, here's what I'm getting at. Does your attitude matter when you serve someone? I think it does. In our text today, Jesus uses these words: love, joy, friends, abide. In our first text from James, we heard, be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger, bridle your tongue. Or you've heard of the fruits of the Spirit, right? And Paul writes in Galatians that the evidence, the result of the Holy Spirit working in your life is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I looked closely. I even looked at the original language. Muttering is not on there. Eye rolling, not on the list. Self-congratulation, not on the list. Martyr syndrome, where you want to make sure everyone knows how much you're suffering, not on the list. Demanding recognition, not on the list. And so I believe attitude matters as we serve. In fact, I think that's the most difficult part of what Jesus commands in this text. Jesus gives quite a few difficult things. He doesn't say love just enough to get credit. He says love just as I have loved you, that Jesus himself is our standard. He doesn't say, do random acts of kindness a couple times a month and you're good. He says abide in love, which means to live, to dwell, to inhabit, for it to be your way of life. He doesn't say serving others will build up your resume for college. He says, lay down your lives. Those are all hard. But I think the hardest of all is that he says we should have joy while doing that. That is pretty tough. But maybe we can use our attitude as a canary in the mine shaft, as a bellwether, as a tripwire of sorts. When I am counseling couples before their wedding, I tell them that eventually, watch out for bitterness. Bitterness is a yellow flashing light. Bitterness in your heart is like the check engine light on your car. You can probably drive it around for a little while, but then again, your engine might explode. And the longer you go without addressing it, the more dangerous it becomes. Whenever you feel bitterness in your heart, that's a good time to get a relational tune-up with a counselor or a pastor if you're more comfortable. And I think it's the same when we are serving someone or serving in a ministry. If you notice bitterness in your heart while you are serving or after you have served, that is a check engine light. If you go to a church meeting and you come home grumpy, that is a check engine light. If you do 1,000 things to help others, but then you relish complaining about it, that is a check engine light. One of the great cultural works of the English language was released in 1987, the parody Spaceballs. And a princess, you've all seen it, right? It's a princess is being rescued by a scoundrel, and she is grumpy at how inconvenient this rescue is for her. It's not up to her standards. And so the scoundrel says to her, "Look, those pouty lips, those flashing eyes, those flushed cheeks, princess, you know something? You are ugly when you're angry. Joyful service is beautiful. Grumpy service is ugly." Or we always make our boys pick up the play area before they go to bed, and they are always just as joyful about it as you might imagine. But sometimes, it's rare, but sometimes, you know, I'm like picking up a few things during the day that, you know, even before the night, it's crossed even my threshold. And I won't even ask them to help. I'm just picking up a few things. And sometimes one of them will come upstairs and help me with a smile on their face. When Charlie marches up the stairs and say, "I pick up my mess," that's heartwarming because of his attitude, because of his joy. Contrasting with when he's laying on the ground like a limp noodle and chucks a toy in the general direction of the bin, not quite as heartwarming for some reason. I mean, the toys got picked up in both cases, right? But grumpiness is ugly and joy is beautiful. Have you ever been the grumpy server? Are you being the grumpy server right now? I would love to declare First Pres Littleton a grumpiness-free zone, but unfortunately, I do not have that power. It worked for forest fires. Maybe it'll work for this, too. Maybe we need a bear to say only you can prevent grumpy serving. But if you are being the grumpy server right now, what can you do about it? If you're having trouble letting go of those little annoyances in your head, if you're keeping Jesus' commandments but your heart is not full of love, what can you do about it? Or to use our first text from James, if you're having a hard time being slow to speak, quick to listen, slow to anger, what can you do about it? Well, let me encourage you to minimize your have-tos and maximize your get-tos. We spent a significant part of this year talking about our spiritual gifts, our spiritual DNA, the ways God has designed us to serve with joy. We had about 80 people take that assessment or come to the class. Now, if you are serving Jesus or serving other people and you go home glad that you did it, you don't need a spiritual gift assessment. You are right in the right spot already. But if you are serving Jesus, you're serving other people, you're doing all these things, and you go home complaining about it, you might need to make a change. And the spiritual gifts can help you find that place to serve with joy, not grumpiness. If you have the spiritual DNA for prophecy or truth-seeking, find a way to serve where you can be oversight or accountability or say the uncomfortable but necessary truth. If you have the spiritual DNA for helping or serving, find a team that does something you believe in and pitch in wherever you can. If you have the spiritual DNA for teaching, find a way to serve where you can help that ministry be the best it can be, or where you can help train others to be the best they can be. If you have a spiritual DNA for encouraging, you can either reach out to others who would be good on the team, who would enjoy the ministry, or find a couple of people to mentor. If you have the spiritual DNA for giving, find a way of serving where you can either find or give the resources that ministry needs to thrive. If you have the spiritual DNA for leading, find a way to serve that allows you to organize, plan, or direct something, either the whole thing or some small part. And if you have the spiritual DNA for compassion or mercy, find a way to reach people who are outsiders or serve people who have physical, emotional, spiritual, or mental needs. Those are ways to find joyful service based on how God has designed you instead of grumpy service. If you are grumpy right now, it might be because you are operating outside of how God designed you to serve. I think this is fairly obvious in the church, but I think it can apply in our relationships as well. Because usually our spiritual gifts are kind of like the love languages, where we want to receive what we are good at. And so if you know someone who is a leader, a good way to serve them is to take something that annoys them and run with it so they don't have to worry about it. Or a good way to serve a prophet or truth seeker is to tell them God's honest truth. Many times a good way to serve someone who has helping or serving is just do a random thing for them. Sometimes you can reverse this. If you know someone who's good at teaching, a good way to serve them would be to find something that they can teach you and then don't roll your eyes about it. Same thing with someone who has mercy or compassion. Many times they have a hard time receiving mercy or compassion from others. Is there a way you can let them in a more meaningful way into your life so they can demonstrate their compassion? A giving person might appreciate knowing that you donated to a cause that they believe in. If you are grumpy about serving, think about your spiritual gifts and maybe they will give you a new way to serve. And if you are trying to say I love you to someone by serving them, think about what they would truly appreciate based on their spiritual gifts. Although, word of warning, if they're a control freak, you have your work cut out for you. They may not want to be served. The other thing that can help you find joy instead of grumpiness is to find the win. We have a couple of Broncos fans here, and we have a couple other Broncos fans who are away getting ready for the game today. But here's a little poll question. Was it more fun to be a Broncos fan when they won the division 5 times in a row and took home a Super Bowl, or when they missed out on the playoffs in 2016 and had a losing record last year? Which was more fun? The winning, right? The Longhorns, it was categorically more fun having 9 straight 10-win seasons and a national title than only winning 5 to 7 games the last few seasons, or finding out yesterday we're only slightly better than Tulsa. Winning is fun. Surprising revelation of the century. You're going to remember nothing else but that great revelation from Cody. Winning is fun. Now, Jesus says we should abide in joy. We should choose to be joyful. But that's not always easy for us. And so find the win. Maybe that's something internal. You know, I enjoy serving this person or serving this ministry because I feel good about it. That's an internal win that isn't dependent on anyone else. I was on a youth mission trip in the Chicago area. One of the houses we were repairing had a very demanding owner, and she would walk around criticizing all the work that the youth were doing, and they were livid. They had traveled halfway across the country to help her, and this was the result. I encouraged them to remember what they were doing pleased Jesus, even if it didn't please the homeowner. Even if the homeowner didn't want to give them credit, Jesus noticed. That is an internal motivation, even when the external factors aren't good. But sometimes it might help you to find that external win too. Even if it's small, I reminded those students that even if she was complaining about it, before we arrived, there were holes in her floor, literal holes. Once we left, there were no more holes in the floor. So even if she was grumpy about it, her life was actually tangibly, provably better. That is an external win. She was a cranky person with holes in her floor. Now she's a cranky person without holes in her floor. That's an improvement. That's a win. If the person you're serving is always, you know, the you missed a spot person, and maybe the small win is realizing, hey, they didn't criticize me this time. I guess it was okay. They could still use some lessons of gratefulness, but you can't control that. Or maybe just remind yourself how you made it a little bit better. Find even a small win and focus on that. That is more joyful than focusing on what's not going well. If you're serving somewhere here at church and you're feeling grumpy, even though it's the kind of thing you're good at and you enjoy, do you know what a win is in that ministry? Why should anyone be doing that ministry, let alone why should you be doing that ministry? What is the God-honoring vision behind it? How is it making an impact? Why is it worth doing? That's why I've been talking the last 2 weeks about church vision, because what excites me, what brings me joy, isn't driven by numbers. Numbers matter, the scale matters, trend matters, but it doesn't emotionally affect me if we have 165 in worship instead of 160 in worship. That's nice, but it doesn't get me going. What gets me excited is when people who aren't already connected with a faith community find a way to belong here. When they find those rooted relationships here, that's a win. Whether it's a Bible study or the choir or a mission project or a book club or quilting, whatever it is, when they find some way to belong, that's a win. When someone finds relationships that matter, that support, that encourage, that heal, that's far better than our shallow culture. That's exciting. That's at least closing some holes in the floor for them. When someone finds a way to believe here, to grow in Christ, that's a win too. Maybe they appreciate the prayer ministry or another Bible study or teaching in Sunday school or mentoring a youth confirmation student, and that reinvigorates their own faith. Whatever it is, that's a win. When we help people find the peace of Jesus Christ that surpasses all understanding instead of running the rat race of accumulation, that is a win, and that is exciting. When someone decides to be loving, branching out to serve, when someone gives their time to be the hands and feet of Jesus, that is a win too. When someone realizes they can find deeper fulfillment serving others rather than serving themselves, that is exciting. If we can help someone belong, believe, and be loving, even if it's just incrementally, even if it takes years, I can find joy in that. That's the win. That's why I'm here. If you want to find the win in your ministry, or you think the ministry that you're involved in needs to reimagine itself, think about those three things. How are we helping people belong or believe or be loving? How are we helping them become rooted, growing, and branching out? How might someone be just a little bit more like Christ after interacting with this ministry? If you can't articulate that in the ministry you're doing, you might be missing the win that would bring you more joy as you serve. Sisters and brothers, Jesus said we should abide in his joy, that we should live in a joyful place as we serve others. Joyful service, not grumpy service. If you find yourself being more grumpy than joyful, is there a better way to serve that is more in line with how God designed you? Or is there some way to focus your attention on the small wins, even if it's just fixing some holes in a cranky person's floor and they're still cranky? Jesus uses the image of abiding very intentionally. It means to settle down, to live. And what's interesting about that is you can choose where you live. And maybe you don't get to choose what kind of house, how big, things like that, but you do have choices on where you live. And in the same way, you can choose joy as well. Abide in joy this week. Amen.